Welcome to our fourth podcast from Registers of Scotland and the first one of 2019. E is for Equality, Women in Senior Roles, featuring the President of the Law Society of Scotland, Alison Atack. Have you ever bought or sold a house, inquired about your property's boundaries, or read a news article about house price trends? Then you'll have come into contact with Registers of Scotland. We compile and maintain 20 public registers, such as Scotland's Land Register, and we are the experts in land and property information. My name is Jennifer, and I'm the keeper of the Registers of Scotland. In this podcast, we're meeting the President of the Law Society of Scotland, Alison Atack. We'll talk about what 2019 holds for the Society, equality within both organisations, and how organisations like ours can inspire inclusion. Welcome, Alison. I'm delighted that you could join us for our fourth podcast.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm delighted to be here.
2018 marked 100 years since the Representation of People Act gave the first British women the right to vote and to stand for public office. This was a historical moment that was marked across the whole of the UK. The right to vote was a momentous legal change for women, but over the years there have been many more legal changes that have enhanced women's rights. As Keeper of the Registers, I felt I should know more about how women's rights in relation to property have changed in Scotland over the years. In Scotland, the Married Women's Property (Brackets Scotland) Acts in 1877, 1881 and 1920 significantly improved things for married women in relation to the rights they had over the property they owned. And some commentators argue that this act paved the way towards establishing women's right to vote, as it publicly recognised women as a separate legal entity from their husbands. These are things we don't even consider nowadays. I would say that I consider myself fortunate to have grown up in relatively blissful ignorance of the fact that gender inequality still existed. Never once during my childhood, where I was surrounded by strong female role models who were scientists, was there any suggestion that I couldn't do something because I was a girl? However, as I progressed in my career within a scientific organisation, I found there were fewer and fewer women of my grade. I would say that I was routinely the only woman in the room, or the only woman on the list of presenters at a conference, and I began to consider what was happening and why. Yes, there were less of us to start with, and this relates to the challenge of encouraging more girls to study science subjects in school. But why wasn't the proportion of women staying the same as I progressed? Why was I increasingly in the minority as I progressed through the organisation? The suffragettes demonstrated what can be achieved on a grand scale by taking action to tackle inequality. But there's still lots more to do. Ongoing action is needed to continue to address inequality wherever it exists. Here at ROS, we are committed to eliminating discrimination and encouraging diversity amongst our workforce. Our aim is that our workforce will be truly representative of the diverse communities we serve, and each employee will feel respected and able to give of their best. We're trying to set an example with our board and senior management team, where our non-executive board consists of three women and one man as our non-executive directors, and our senior management team consists of two women and three men. And as of the 31st of March 2018, our gender pay gap is shrinking. Currently across the business, women's average hourly rate is only 2% lower than that of men's. In other words, when comparing mean hourly rates, women are earning 98p for every pound that a man is earning. That's an improvement from 4% the year before and shows that we're moving in the right direction. Our workforce has a 50-50 split between men and women, and there's an even split across our age demographic as well, ranging from 16 to 24 to 65 plus. Also in 2018, we did something significant to support inclusion for our customers. Following discussions with members of the trans community, we've introduced a new policy relating to changes of name on title sheets. When we're told by a person that they are undergoing or have undergone a process of gender reassignment, we will show only their new name on the title sheet and change existing entries in the securities section so that they no longer reflect the name used in the security deed, but instead reflect their new name as a grantor of heritable security. The right to privacy about a person's trans history is very important to many trans people, and that's why Roz has put procedures in place to ensure that trans customers updating their title sheets with new names that accurately reflect their identity are treated with dignity and respect. If you're interested in reading more about some of this, there's a blog, and you can go to insideatroz.blog and search for E is for Equality, the keeper on how organisations like ours can inspire inclusion. And if you're interested in the gender pay gap figures for public sector organisations, you can visit www.gov.uk and search on view gender pay gap information. And if you go to www.roz.gov.uk, you can search for the information on how a trans person can undergo the process that we've described of changing their name on the title sheet. So now let's start our conversation with Alison and find out more about her and the Law Society of Scotland. Alison, can we start with a quick introduction to the Law Society of Scotland, who you are and your role at the Society?
The Law Society's job is to lead and represent and regulate Scottish solicitors, accredited paralegals, trainee solicitors, etc. And I chair our board and the council, which is over 50 members, representing constituencies across Scotland, including in-house solicitors and also lay members.
And what attracted you to the role of president of the Law Society?
On several occasions after a contest, I was elected by the Glasgow faculty members to be their representative on council of the Law Society of Scotland. And I've worked with the Society throughout my career as a committee member and a convener of committees, latterly as the Client Protection Subcommittee convener. I always thought I got so much more out of my connections with the Society than I put in. So this is my way of saying thanks to all those members who have supported me and to help the profession maintain its very important role in civic society.
And what would you say are the best parts of your job?
It's very difficult to say. There have been so many really good parts of this job. I could mention visits to London and Belfast and Brussels and Scotland House there. I've been very privileged indeed, but I have to say the highest point is meeting the young people who will make up the future of our profession. Students at law clinics throughout Scottish universities already making a difference to those who can't afford access to the courts and tribunals. I also love the admission ceremonies where young lawyers who have completed their training are admitted to our profession and receive a certificate to confirm that. Their enthusiasm, confidence, and obvious intelligence is a joy to watch.
I'd certainly agree, Alison. I think if I was comparing the best parts of my job, meeting many of your solicitors across Scotland fairly recently has been a real highlight. And I think within that, meeting some of the trainee solicitors who were just getting started on their journey was really exciting to hear about their views about where they think things like conveyancing may be going in the future.
Yeah, I think the profession is in really good hands going forward.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was noticeable, the people in the room who wanted to know all about what the next steps on some of the digital conveyancing things were, perhaps the people who had lots of years left in their career and were thinking about what was going to be involved as they went forward. So tell me, Alison, what are your plans for your whole year in post?
Well, equality is something that is one of my major items that I want to push forward. And for us, that means everyone who enters it should be treated equally and fairly throughout their career, regardless of background, race, gender, etc. And it's my goal to promote a blueprint for a more inclusive profession.
And do you think being a woman in such a senior role makes a difference?
I do think being a woman in this senior role should make a difference. Hopefully it will encourage others to become involved with the Society and to join with their peers at local level. There will come a time that it won't matter what your gender is. There are improvements already, but equality has to be pushed up from the grassroots as well as from the leadership.
And can you tell me a little bit more about what the changes are that you really, and challenges that you see in that happening. I mean, I completely agree. I think you can be a role model, you can be a senior person in an organisation, but actually it's got to be grassroots that makes the changes. So can you tell me a bit more about what you're doing to encourage that?
Yes, in fact, it's very important for the UK, actually, at the moment. All law societies in the UK have female presidents, which is unheard of. So that's a good building block. But we can't forget either that it was only 100 years ago that women were allowed to be admitted as solicitors in the UK. And it's worth noting, the first of those was a Scottish lady, Madge Easton Anderson, who graduated from the University of Glasgow and had then to go to the Court of Session to be allowed to be admitted and described as a person under the Act. But we've come a long way since then, and we have been making great advances in equality and diversity in recent years.
And do you get feedback from some of you mentioned talking to your younger members? Do you get a sense when you talk to some of your younger members what they see as the challenges that remain around diversity and equality within the profession?
Yeah, well, what we have done recently is carry out the biggest research that we have done before with the profile of the legal profession in Scotland, and the almost 3,000 solicitors and accredited specialists took part. Questions in that survey focused on equality and diversity issues.
Sounds really interesting to have done a survey, and tell me a little bit more about what you've learnt from the survey in terms of what your members think about equality and diversity and what that's going to do in terms of shaping the action you think you need to take.
We have mixed emotions about the survey results. We're pleased on one hand that there has been progress, but there's still much more to do. And we're also saddened that any member of the legal profession has experienced bullying or discrimination. 80% of respondents thought that the gender equality in the profession had improved in the past 5 years, and the survey results show we still have a lot of hard work to ensure equality and diversity in the legal profession. Work-life balance is very important to the profession, and the majority of respondents at 73% felt that they were or we're mostly achieving a reasonable work-life balance. We want the Scottish legal profession to be diverse and fair, accessible to anyone with drive and talent who dreams of joining the legal profession regardless of their background. And we want people to join the legal profession to have a long, fulfilling career. We've set out 28 recommendations to address equality and diversity issues with the profession, which includes things like working with employers' representative groups such as the Glass Network and Scottish Ethnic Minority Lawyers Association, as well as our members to stamp out bullying and discrimination, close the gender pay gap, ensure clear and fair progression for Black, Asian and minority ethnic solicitors, and to enable LGBT legal professionals to feel totally comfortable being out at work. And to ensure also that disabled members feel they can ask their employer for a reasonable adjustment, and to encourage employers to consider how they can offer a better work-life balance to their solicitors and accredited paralegals.
That sounds like an amazing set of things to be working on, and obviously not dissimilar challenges to some of the things we're working on here at ROS. Just for interest, can I pick up a little bit about the gender pay gap? Can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, how much of an issue this is for the Law Society of Scotland and its members?
It was really encouraging to see that our recent profile of the profession survey showed that the median gender pay gap has almost halved since 2013, down from 42% to 23%. That was an encouraging surprise to me. It's measured by comparing the midpoint of the median category of earnings for male and female respondents, which gives respective figures of 55,000 and 42,500. These results are striking, but we still have a lot of work to do, and hopefully by the time we carry out the next survey in 3 to 5 years, we should see that pay gap halved.
That is really encouraging. I think it must always be satisfying when you've been taking action to improve gender equality in the profession and you're starting to see that actually come through in terms of what people are earning when they're in the legal profession in Scotland. I think it's, as I said earlier, I think it's something we've managed to reach a fairly equal level between genders and pay here at ROS, but there's still work to do. I think it's not, you can never be complacent about these things. And we want to make sure we're maintaining best practice in the areas where we've reached equality and not letting things slide. Where you think you have had success, what do you think you can do to kind of keep that best practice up and not let people feel that the problem is solved and there's nothing more to be done?
Yes, I totally agree with you that we have to keep that statistic up. And where we've reached equality, we have to develop our 28 recommendations published after the profile of the profession review. For example, we have to educate the profession in eradicating bias, whether it's conscious or unconscious, and think about whether training is necessary for this, even compulsory training. Our regulatory research into this area will keep us aware of what is happening. It's something we've chosen to do since 2006, and it's proved very, very important for the profession.
Yeah, I think you pick up on something that we also feel is important, the eliminating bias, even if it's unconscious bias, and yeah, making it mandatory or potentially mandatory for people to have training to make sure that that is eliminated. And the challenge, of course, is I think people who don't realise they're biased, getting them to realise they might need training to help them with their unconscious bias is quite a difficult thing to do. But that's really great. I mean, it's obviously the legal profession in Scotland is an organisation we spend a lot of time working with, and it's very comforting to me to know that you take the need to address equality just as seriously as we do. I think it will help both our organisations be stronger if we can have a more diverse population within them. So thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. I'd like to move on now to have a look at what's next for you and the society in 2019. I've heard that this summer is the Society's 70th anniversary. Obviously, we did our 400th anniversary last year or the year before last, but any plans for the 70th anniversary celebrations?
Yes, you're quite right. We're the babies here, really, but it is our platinum anniversary. And in those 70 years, we've seen many changes in legislation and the way which the legal profession used technology to speed up processes. And an interesting fact is that in 1960s and 70s, Scottish solicitors were not even allowed to advertise their businesses or services or even hand out their business cards without the risk of being reprimanded by the Law Society at that time. Certainly cannot imagine that being the case today. Since the 2000s, many law firms have included social media as an important part of their marketing strategy. We are launching our Platinum Year logo and plans later this week, so watch this space for what's going to be happening.
Oh, I'll be absolutely watching the space and looking forward to for any opportunities for ROS to participate in helping you celebrate. So, Alison, our interview's coming to an end, and just one final question. While we've got you here, we want to get as much information out of you as possible. What's been your proudest moment so far in your professional life?
This is a very difficult one because I'm not really prone to being a proud person, so I had to really think about the answer to this. But on reflection, I realised I had done what I set out to do in my career, which was to help clients along the way in all their steps in life and their families. And I've achieved this. I really didn't think I had until last March, when I had decided to leave private practice to take up this post. I wrote to many of my clients advising them of my retirement and who in the firm was going to be taking over responsibility for their work. And I added a little sentence saying, I'd be very happy to see them for a coffee so I could introduce them to that person. And then for the next generation, I thought I might get a handful, but I was absolutely deluged with the responses and all of them wanting to meet me for the last time and meet my successor. And also a lot of them said, by the way, would you like to do my will or my power of attorney before you go? So I ended up doing a lot more work, quite good business development actually, a lot more work than I expected to do. Some of these clients went back for 38 years, so that was a really proud moment that I actually thought I had done something right in my career.
Well, that's a really lovely story. And I suppose, yeah, seeing clients who've gone through various life stages and you've worked with them the whole way and you feel that when you're coming to retirement, they want to be there to mark the occasion. That's really significant. You're quite right to feel proud about it. So thank you, Alison, for joining us for our fourth podcast. I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's been really fascinating to hear what the Law Society of Scotland is doing to promote equality and to make sure that it's really making itself a fit organisation for the next generation of legal professionals coming through. And I do hope we'll continue to work closely with you and the Law Society of Scotland for years to come.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. It's been a great pleasure working with you, and I think we can do a lot together on equality and diversity in the profession.
Absolutely, and we'll, I'm sure, follow up and talk offline about what else we can do. So thank you to Alison, and thank you for listening to the Registers of Scotland podcast. Make sure to rate us or leave a comment if you've enjoyed our podcast today, and remember to check in with our social media channels for regular updates. We'll be back soon with our next instalment. Thanks for listening.